All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is daf samech. We have a very, very beautiful daf gemara today. We're picking up. Today's daf. Today's daf is samech aleph 61. So we are picking up on samech amud beis 60b. So we'll say. So we left off. Simi Barashi. So 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. So remember, what we left off, yes, it was an interesting machlokes about the river, damming off the river, for the fields that border the river. And we saw again a machlokes as to who has priority. Is it the people upstream, or is it the people downstream? So it's a machlokes, and the Gemara ended off in a very interesting way, which is called the Alim Gvar. Essentially, again, since we did not decide the halacha, whoever's stronger gets it. In other words, that everybody has rights. There's another way of saying everybody has a right, and pretty much whoever dams off the river first to water their field, ultimately, again, has that right. So it says the Gemara of Simi Bar Ashi. This is interesting. So listen to this case. So it's our story. Simi Bar Ashi came to Abaye. And he said to Abaye, Amarle, lo svan mar be'idna. So Simi Bar Ashi says to Abaye, Rebbe, can you set aside time to learn with me? Can you learn with me? Set up a chavrusa. Amarle, isli idna ledidi. So Abaye said, I would be happy to, but I don't have time. Right? Again, I have certain time in the day which I learn, and I need that time for my own learning. Velosvan mar balayla. So says Rasim bar Ashi Nusa, Abaye Rebbe, could we learn together at night? Amarle, your boss is going to blow you away. Amarle, isli maya lashkuye. Oh, at night? At night I work. I water my fields. He'll say, this is Abaye, right? The conception we have of Abaye of sitting in the base medrash and learning all day. Abaye stayed in the base medrash as long as he could. But guess what? Abaye's got to pay the mortgage also. So what happens? At night, Abaye would water his fields. That's what he would do. Amarle, says Rav Simi Bar Ashi says, Ana mashkina leila mar maya biyamama, velosvan mar balayla. So Rav Simi Bar Ashi says, Rebbe, I'll go ahead and water your fields during the day so that we can go ahead and have a chavrusa at night. Amarle l'chai. So Abaye said, fine, shkoyach. Absolutely, I'll take that deal. So what happens? So Rav Simi Bar Ashi has to go ahead and water the fields. So he went to the fields downstream and he said to them, listen guys, the halacha is that the guys upstream have rights to water the fields first. He went to the guys downstream. The guys downstream have rights to water their field first. I will say, so he's telling everyone that the other one has the right. He's, by the way, Abaye's field is actually in the middle. What does he do? While they're trying to figure out the order, Adahachi Sachar Miskar Va'ashke. And then while they're figuring out the order, what does Rav Simi Bar Ashi do? He dams off the field, he dams off the river, and channels the water into Abaye's field, who waters the field. So when Rav Simi Bar Ashi came, showed up that night for his chavrusa with Abaye, he told Abaye what happened. And Abaye said, Amarle, kibay tre avaratali. You went ahead and you used both opinions to secure for me a favorable outcome. Avaratali. So Abaye was upset. Abaye thought that Rav Simi Bar Ashi took advantage of the situation, of the ambiguity in halacha, and used it to advance his own purposes. Abaye would not eat of the fruit of the field that year. As well said that Abaye was so upset with what Rav Simi Bar Ashi did that he did not want to get any benefit from the fruit of the field that grew as a result of that irrigation. So the Gemara goes weiter. Hano b'nei charmach. Da'azil karu b'reisha d'shanvasa. Va'adruha v'shajyuha. So we'll say the people of Charmach. So B'nai Charmach, what was the place? So the people of Charmach went ahead and they dammed off the river. Now we'll say, now they did something very interesting. What they did was, if you could imagine again, so the river's flowing down, the field is over here. They dug a channel to divert the river into their field. But what they did is, they went and essentially made the water take a U, like a U. They brought the water in, it came around the field, and they dug it out, and it came out just a little bit lower river. Okay, that's how they watered their field. Asu ilay lekamida by amrle maskilinarin. So they both say the people ultimately again upstream came along and said that the people of Charmach are slowing down the flow of the river. So what happens? Abai said to them, dig a little bit, meaning make the channel, make the river a little bit deeper. Make the river a little bit deeper, and that'll allow the flow of water to be better. So what happened? Amrulei kayav shiperi. We can't do that because if we make the water a little bit deeper, then what happens? On a year where there's not a lot of rainfall, the water level will be too low and will not water the crops. If that's the case, Amrulehu zilu saliku nafshai chumehasam. He told Bnei Charmach, what you're doing is illegal, and you have to fill in the channel. So we'll say, this goes back to, I don't remember who mentioned, maybe Bar Fishel mentioned this idea yesterday, the right to go ahead and channel water into your fields from the river is a license that every bordering field has, as long as your use of the river does not adversely impact the others. That's what's coming out over here. So Bnei Charmach had this great idea to run the water through the field, except it impacts the water source negatively for everyone else. Therefore, again, Abaye said they had to cease and desist. Mitzudas chayis va'ovos v'dagim yeshpan. So, remember again, the Mishnah said that if you trap something in your trap, whether it's animals or fish, so that really, me'ikra adin, the Mishnah says, that is no gezel, it's not really theft, because you don't own something, you don't own movable property until when? Until you take possession of it. But yet, the rabbi said, mipnei darki shalom, for the benefit, for peace in the community, once something is in someone's net, it's theirs. You can't take it. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, on the other hand, argued and said, no, it's mamish gezel gomer, right? Rabbi Yossi, it's actual theft. Says the Gemara, something very interesting, Bo'ozli va'ahuri kuli amatap of samechalef kuli amalo pligi. Shabbos said with ozli and ahuri. So Rashi says it's the last Rashi on samechamad days, second to last. Ozli rishto shalchutin sheish lantok. So now the Gemara says, well, it depends what kind of trap. If you're dealing with a trap that has a toch, what we call an insud, in other words, we'll say there are different kinds of traps. So if you could imagine, there's a type of trap, you know, if you have an animal trap where the clamp closes on the animal's leg, that's one type of trap. Another type of trap is where the animal walks into something, and then again, the opening closes, and the animal is trapped inside. So the Gemara says, if you have the type of trap that has what he calls a toch, an inside, kuli amalo pligi. Everyone agrees that as soon as the animal walks into the trap, the animal is owned by the owner of the trap. Because we'll say, in that case, what's happened? The trap is my kli. The animal walked into my kli. Once something walks into my kli, by definition, it's mine. So again, everyone agrees that if you have like this larger trap that actually closes around the animal, that acquires the animal. Ki pligi. When do they argue? Belechi v'kukri. With a trap that's like, lechi literally means like a hook. Kukri means a cord. So Rashi points out over here, this is easier to see with fishing. Sometimes what they used to do is that they'd hang a cord with like hooks on it across the river, and they'd snag some fish like that as the fish were swimming. So something like that, Rabbi will say, that's where the Mishnah says that really if somebody were to go ahead and take that fish off my hook, the halacha would be that what? The halacha would be that that's technically not gezel. Technically, that's not theft. Why? Because again, I haven't acquired it yet. Mishum darkei shalom, for benefit of peace, that's when you shouldn't go ahead and do that. But if the animal, is that whether it's a fish or something else, is trapped inside of a utensil, in a circumstance like that, then what? Then my keli, then my utensil actually acquires the object itself. And if somebody were to go ahead and take it, that would be actual gezel. The Gemara goes right there. Similarly, Mitzias Chere Shota, Rabbi Yossi Lo Gezel Gomer. So we'll say, remember the Mishnah said that if you go ahead, if a Chere Shota, a Katan, finds something, so, right, so a Katan picks up $100 bill, and what, if I take it from him? Technically speaking, that's not Gezel. Technically, it's not theft. Right? But yet, you can't do it. Why? Because of Darki Sholom. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says, no, it's Gezel Gomer. It's real theft. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Gezel Gomer LeDivrehem. When Rabbi Yossi says that it's real theft, Rabbi Yossi doesn't mean that it's Deoraisa theft, doesn't mean that it's biblically prohibited. What he means is that it's Gezel MeDirabanon. It's real rabbinic theft. So what's going on over here? So they seem to be saying the same thing. So the Tanakhama is saying, you can't steal from a Chere Shota the Kohen, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. Which I will say, I think most of us interpret it to mean what? It's Asr MeDirabanon. It's Asr Midrabanan. And now Rabbi Yossi is saying, no, it's not just Dark Yishonim, it's Asr Midrabanan. Yes. It's Rabbinic that. So what's the chilik between the two? Awesome. That's something very interesting. I'll tell you what the chilik is. L'mayin afkamina, lo tzio b'dayonin. Listen, this is very interesting. If, let's say, I went ahead and I stole from a Cheresh Shota v'katan, would Beis Din get involved to try to extract the money from me and return it to the original owner? Look at Rashi. The hotzi b'dayonin, the rabbanon lo nafik b'dayonin. Umil Rabbi Yosi gezel ma'alya lo havi lifsal le'edus v'la'abar alav b'lav. So we'll say, so listen to this. So the idea over here is, what, so according to the Tanna Kamma, so if I steal from a cheri shot to the katan, I'm not allowed to do that. It's also b'nei darki shalom. But would Beis Din open up a case against me for it? No. According to Rabbi Yosi Halili, who says that it's gezel gomer, that no, it's real rabbinic theft. So Rabbi Yosi, once you call it real rabbinic theft, then what? Then Beis Din would in fact open up a case against me in Beis Din. So says the Gemara, ani hamenakev b'rosh hazayis masha tachlav. So remember again, similarly, if an ani, if a poor person is knocking the olive tree to get olives. Remember we spoke about this, that when you want to go ahead and get olives, often what they would do is they would take a stick, they would hit the tree, they'd put like a cloth underneath the olive tree, and you'd collect the olives that fell down. So technically speaking, if the ani is knocking the olive tree, and I walk by and take his olives, technically that's not gezel, right? It's not gezel because he doesn't own it. You only, remember, you only own movable property when you take possession, mashiach of it. But yet the Mishnah said that the rabbi said you can't do it. Why? But nei darki shalom. Says the Gemara Tana, emlike et v'nasan biyad, hare zagezel gomer. So let's say, so the Braisa teaches us something very interesting. That if you went ahead and, let's say the ani took the olives off the tree with his hand, and then put it down on the cloth beneath the tree. So everyone agrees in a situation like that, if someone else were to then go ahead and take the olives off the cloth, that what? That what? That would be real theft. Why? Look at Rashi. Imlikate v'nasan agabe karka biyad hoil umatu liyadei gezel gomer. Because, well, so that's obvious. Because again, once I've actually held the olives in my hand and taken possession of them, then I own them, and therefore, by definition, it's now gezel gomer. It's now real theft. So Rav Kahana hava ka'azil lochutzel. Rav Kahana was once going to Chutzel. Chutzel is a place. Chazi lahu gavra dehavishadei ufye. The Karnatran Tamre. So I will say he saw a guy who was throwing sticks at the date palm, and the dates were falling down to the ground. Ozel kamenaket va'achol. So I will say, so what happened? This is an interesting story. Rav Kahana went over to the cloth underneath the tree and started eating some dates, right? Because after all, again, technically speaking, it's mutter. Now I will say, it must be that Rav Kahana either wasn't aware of this Darki Shalom piece, or maybe had an alternate understanding of it. But either way, he goes over to the cloth and begins to eat the dates. So Amalei Chazimar de Biadoy Shadasinu. So the guy who's collecting the dates says, "Excuse me, Rebbe, I want you to know that I took most of those dates down by hand. Meaning, first, I'm not throwing sticks now, but those dates I originally took by hand and put them down over here. Which means that Rebbe, they're mine. Happy to share, but you can't just take it. I own them." Amalei, to which Rav Kahana responded, "May Asre Rabbi Yoshia Asa, you must come from the city of Rabbi Yoshia." Now, listen, now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. May Asre Rabbi Yoshia Asa, "Lefichach ata baki bedinin, lefishu dorish l'rabim umodian." So I'll say, apparently Rabbi Yoshia was a good Rabbi, and he used to teach his community members all of the various halachas. So the Balabatim from Rabbi Yoshia's time were very well versed in halacha. So Rav Kahana was impressed that this individual was able to answer him in halachic terms and tell him that what he was doing was illegal. Kari alei v'tzadik yisod olam. So Rav Kahana Rabbi Yoshia, he said about Rabbi Yoshia, tzadik yisod olam, that the tzadik ultimately is the foundation of the world. Right, beautiful Gemara. Ein memachin biyad aniyim, aniyei nachin b'lekev v'shecho pe'em neidak yishalom. So the last thing the Mishnah said is that we do not prevent Gentile paupers from collecting leket shecho and pe'a, even though these are tithes that are set aside for Jews, and even though, again, at the end of the day, these are meant for Jewish paupers. If non-Jewish individuals, if Gentiles come into my field and begin to collect, we don't stop them. Says the Gemara, turn around, Rabbi Bosai, along these same lines, Mefarnesin Aniye Nochrim Vani Yisrael. Rabbi Bosai, this is a halacha that's codified in Shulchan Aruch. It's actually a very interesting halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Tzedaka brings down that we support Gentile paupers together with Aniye Yisrael. So it's interesting, there's a machlokis and a farshim among the Shach and Taz in this halacha, that what is the lashon of Mefarnesin Aniye Nochrim Im Aniye Yisrael. So some understand that this halacha means that if you have a group of paupers, and in that group are Jews and non-Jews, that you have to give everyone money. Meaning, you can't just give the Jews in the group and not the Gentiles in the group, because it doesn't look nice. You can't be part of society if you only take care of your own. The Shach, however, understands that the lashon of Im Aniye Yisrael does not just mean when they're together. Im Aniye Yisrael is a legal statement that we support Jew and non-Jew alike. So whether there's a Jewish pauper who comes to me for help, or a Gentile pauper who comes to me for help, whoever comes to me for help, I help them. Even if they're not coming together. But say that being said, of course, it goes without saying that in the precedence of tzedakah, so obviously Jews and Jewish causes have to have a higher priority for us than other causes. But nevertheless, if Nedar Kishalom, we go ahead and we support Aniye Nachrim also. Similarly, Umevakrin Choli Nachrim Im Choli Yisrael. We go ahead and we do Biker Cholim for not Gentiles, along with Jews. And as we both say, that if a person is going room to room in a hospital, right, and they're going there and they're just wishing people a speedy recovery, or Fuah Shalema. So the idea over here is that you knock on the door, Jew or Gentile, right? Jew or Gentile, right? So again, obviously, we'll say it doesn't mean if I'm going to do Biker Cholim, it doesn't mean I have to visit every single person in the hospital. But what it means is, we'll say, just to tell you where this comes up, and it's a very important yisod, if you're going to see someone in the hospital and the person is sharing a room with someone else, you know, so remember in those hospitals, it's just a curtain that's between them. It's so important to go ahead and just peek your head in on the other side just to wish the person a refuah shleima. You don't have to sit down with them, because understand, if you're the other person in that hospital room, you hear, you know, a person is sick, a person is ill, it's an isolating experience. So imagine you're the other person in the hospital room, you know, your roommate has a visitor, someone's sitting there asking about him, seeing what he could do about him. You don't know if that other person has visitors, doesn't have visitors, has family, doesn't have family, has community, doesn't have community. You take 30 seconds before you leave and you peek your head in, hi, Shalom Aleichem, Shmuel Silber. I mean, use your own name. But, you know, just going ahead, I'm sorry you're here, we should have a speedy recovery. It's an incredible thing. That's what the Gemara is saying. So you're doing Bikur Cholim. Make sure to go ahead and look out for the other as well. The Kovrin Meisei Nachrim Meisei Yisrael. We bury the Gentile dead together with the Jewish dead. Now, what does this mean? So says Rashi, Meisei Yisrael, Lo Bikivrei Yisrael. Doesn't Chas V'Shalom mean we do not bury non-Jews in Jewish cemeteries, but rather Ela Misaskim Bahem Im Matzum Harugim Im Yisrael. So Rashi actually gives a very interesting twist over here. Rashi says that we're talking about over here, if we find that Gentiles have been killed, meaning if we find that people have been killed, so what he's referring to over here is essentially like a Gentile mace mitzvah. That if a Gentile has been killed and there's no one to bury him, there's no one to take care of him, so ultimately again, we take care of it. Is there a halachic mandate in that? Doesn't have to be a halachic mandate for a Jew to realize what's right. So these are all mipnei darkei shalom. These are all things that are essentially necessary in order to be part of greater society. Incredible Gemara. Says the Mishnah. We'll say now we get a little bit more to some technical halachas. Mash'elas isha l'chaverta. And actually this is going to open the door to a fascinating discussion, a little bit about lifnei iver, about how to deal with people who may not be as observant, as religious, as affiliated as we are, with matters of halacha. So says the Mishnah, Mash'elas isha l'chaverta chashuda ala shvius. So we'll say a woman is permitted to go ahead and lend to her friend who's chashuda ala shvius. So we'll call her Rachel. Rachel has a neighbor. A neighbor is chashuda ala shvius, which means she doesn't keep Shemitah. She doesn't keep Shemitah. Now, what does that mean? It means she uses illegal Shemitah produce. You understand when I say illegal Shemitah? I'm not talking about heter mechira or other things that people contest. I mean, literally, like, she's farming. She's farming, the neighbor's farming, they're growing their own stuff. It's Shemitah. They're in violation of Shemitah. So what happens? So the woman who observes is permitted to lend to her friend who doesn't keep Shemitah. Nafa V'kavra v'rechayim v'tanur. She could lend to her friend. Little boy says, so naf and kavra are a sifter and a sieve. Rechayim means like a handmill. Tanur is an oven. So she can go ahead and lend all of these things. Rabbi said, now what's the chap? Now, I see what the Mishnah is saying is, you might have thought you can't lend these things. Why? Because what is she going to do with all of these things? She's going to process her wheat, right? And yet, again, her wheat is illegal wheat. It's illegal Shemitah wheat. So nevertheless, I'm permitted to go ahead and lend her the utensils. However, avalo tavur v'lo titchan ima. But I can't sort, the neighbor can't sort or grind the wheat with her Shemitah violating neighbor. As we'll say, so we'll call her Rachel. Rachel is the tzaddikus. So Rachel could go ahead and lend her Shemitah violating neighbor utensils, because what she does with the utensils is her own business. What Rachel can't do is participate in the sorting and grinding of wheat together with her Shemitah violating neighbor. Why not? Because that at the end is what we call Misayeya la Ovre Avera. So there you're actively aiding and abetting someone in the commission of an Avera. Rashi says, Ovir lo tavar velo titchon ima lisaya. You can't help her grind her illegal wheat, her prohibited wheat, mifnei, sha'asr lisayeya biadayim yide Ovre Avera b'shas Avera. Because they will say, you are not permitted to go ahead and literally help out and assist Ovre Avera at the time that they are violating. A very important yisod. You can't be the enabler or the assister in someone else's commission of an avera. Similarly, Eishes Chaver, Mashalis La Eishes Amaretz Nafa Vekarva Uboreres Vetochen Es Marakedes Hima. It's very interesting. So we'll say Eishes Chaver means the wife of a Talmud Chacham. Now, by the way, the truth is, Chaver doesn't actually have to mean the Talmud Chacham. Chaver means someone who is careful with the laws, in this case, of Truma and Meiser. So the wife of someone, so a woman who is careful with the laws of Trumas and Maestros, could go ahead and lend to her friend, who is the wife of an Amaref. They both said, the Halacha presupposes that Ame Haaretz are not careful with Trumas and Maestros. So the wife of a Chaver could go ahead and lend to the wife of the Amaretz, the Nafa Kavra, the sifter, the sieve, Boreres Vitochenes Merakelis. They both say, in this case over here, what's the Halacha? The wife of the Chaver has the ability to literally sift the wheat, grind the wheat, together with her friend, the wife of the Amaretz. So she could go ahead, because we'll say, which is logic, why? Because remember, there's nothing illegal about the wheat of the Amaretz, and there's nothing illegal about the grinding and the processing of the wheat. However, Aval, Mishatatila Samayim, but once the Eishes Amaretz adds the water in to the flour, Lotigo Ima, then the Eishes Chaver should not really touch the mixture anymore. Lefi she'in machzikin yedei ovrei avera, because you are not permitted to aid and abet those who violate the halacha. We'll say, look at Rashi. Avam mishetatila samayim lo siga. Lefi shemagalgala. Lefi shemishegalgala. Hutpala lechala. Vekametame machmas kelim temeim. Vizum esayos legalgal. Vaasar legrom tumalachala. Because also remember, once you mix in the water with the flour and you begin to make a dough, then it becomes chayev, the dough becomes chayev in challah. So the Eishes Chaver, the wife of the Talmud Chacham, cannot aid and abet the wife of the Amaretz in fashioning the dough, because first of all, the utensils themselves of an Amaretz usually are ritually impure, which means that the challah becomes impure. So you can't go and actively assist in the creation of impure challah. Therefore, again, the wife of the Talmud Chacham could help out in every single point of the process, up until the water is added to the flour. So the Gemara says, why? Lefi shein machzikin yedei ovrei avera. Because you can't go ahead and literally strengthen the hands of those who violate the halacha. Well, in other words, what the Mishnah is saying is the following. If you notice, by the way, right, we don't try to dictate what people do or what people don't do. So, if you're going to violate Shemitah, that's your business. You're going to go and not separate Trumas and Maestros or use impure Yukalim. That's your business. Again, there is a mitzvah of Chacham, mitzvah of rebuke, but in this Mishnah, it's essentially saying like this. That person's going to do what they're going to do. I can't actively help you in the commission of an Avera, right? I'm not going to throw stones at you. I'm not going to not be your friend. I'm not going to stop talking to you. But I can't, I, in all good faith, if I love you and I care about you, I can't help you do something that is actively wrong. So at the end of the day, I help you to a point, but once you get into the realm of illegal halachic activity, I can no longer help you. V'kulan lo amru ela mipnei darki shalom. And I must say, all of this was said, mipnei darki shalom. I must say, now what does that mean? Meaning, what the Mishnah is saying is like this. If you're a purist, then what should be the halacha? If someone goes ahead and violates Shemitah, what should be the ikra halacha? I shouldn't be able to lend them even my utensils. Right? Because I will say, if we're concerned about machziki de ovrei avera, so giving my neighbor, violating the neighbor, my sieve, my sifter, my handle, that's also machziki de ovrei avera. So the Mishnah says, but we can't do that in Mei Darkei Shalom. So Darkei Shalom says, you have to be able to get along with your neighbors. We'll say, this is an incredible Mishnah, which would serve us well as a nation to learn this Mishnah, that Mishum Darkei Shalom means that I have to accept that not everybody's going to do the quote-unquote right thing. However you define the right thing. I have to accept that that's a reality. That is reality within Klal Yisrael. And I have to learn to coexist with every single person. But Rabbi said, here's the idea. So Mipnei Darkei Shalom said, Chazal said, you could coexist. And coexistence means neighbors lend each other stuff. But Rabbi said, Darkei Shalom, coexistence has its limitations as well. So I could coexist to a point. I mean, I could coexist all the time. That my ability to reach out to you in a neighborly, loving, helpful fashion will have its end point. At a certain point in time where your activities are actively illegal, then I have to take a step back. I still love you, I still care about you, I still wish you well, but I can't actively help you anymore down this path. So Mipnei Darkei Shalom, you can lend the utensils, you can help out in certain ways, but at a certain point in time you have to take back. Umachzikin yidei nachrim b'shvias, and I will say this is an interesting enigmatic statement, which we'll have to see what it means. You can go ahead and be machzik, you can strengthen the hands of Gentiles during Shemitah, we'll see what that means. But you can't strengthen the hands of Jews who seem to work during Shemitah. And all of this, v'sholim bishloman, I will say this is actually interesting. So the halacha is, you can inquire about the welfare of Gentiles, mipnei darkei shalom, or because of darkei shalom. So we'll say, so what does this mean? I could inquire about the welfare of Gentiles, that's darkei shalom, isn't that just good manners? So Rashi says something amazing, v'sholim bishloman, kol hayamim, va'afa pi shematil al hanachri shem shamayim, shashalom shmo shalom kadosh baruch hu. We'll say what the Mishnah is saying is, I can give a non-Jew a greeting of Shalom Aleichem. Now, what's the chap of that? So, the idea over here is Shalom is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I might have thought that I can't greet a Gentile with the name of God. Kamash Malan says the Mishnah, I can. Why? Mibnei Darkei Shalom. So, why is that Darkei Shalom? Because if there's a group of people and I'm giving the Jews one type of greeting, and I'm giving the Gentiles another type of greeting, especially if it's a Gentile who lives amongst Jews, who understands that Shalom Aleichem is a greeting. So to go ahead, right, to go ahead and give him a different kind of greeting may create some level of animosity, and therefore Aloch Lamaisa, I'm permitted to greet him with a Darkei Shalom. Amazing idea. Says the Gemara, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So what was it?
What's the response of Kol HaYamim?
Oh, so all the Rashi is saying over here is that the first statement that was just said before is that you're machzikin yedei nachrim b'shvius. So I might have thought that sholem b'shlaman, maybe he's also b'shvius. Therefore Rashi says, no, they're two independent statements. You could be machzik the hands of a nachri by Shemitah, and you could give him shalom all the time, kol hayamim. Says the Gemara, ma'ishna reisha, ma'ishna seifa. So what's the difference in the first two cases of the Mishnah? So we're supposed to understand, in the first case of the Mishnah, which was a woman dealing with her neighbor, who is a violator of Shemitah. So what's the halakha? If my neighbor is a violator of Shemitah, so I can go ahead, I can lend her the sifter, the sieve, the handmill, and the oven, but I cannot sort or grind the wheat with her. Yet, what's the halakha? If she's a violator, if she's an Eishes Ama'aretz, right? An Eishes Ama'aretz. And therefore, again, she goes in and she doesn't take Chumas Semesis. What's the halakha? I can go ahead and give her all these things, and I can even grind and sort the wheat with her. I just have to take a step back when she adds in the water. So why the distinction here? So Amar Abaye. So Rashi says, Amar Abaye. Fine. Amar Abaye. Rov Ame Ha'aretz Ma'asr Neim. So what says Abaye? Says, I'll tell you why. Because in reality, in the second case of the Mishnah, which is an issue of a woman who doesn't tithe, the majority of Amaratzim do tithe. This is actually interesting. The majority do. There's a significant minority that does not. And therefore the rabbis felt that in order to protect us against the minority who does not tithe, so they went in and they legislated that you have to assume that all produce of an Ama Aretz is untithed. And therefore our bias is because the majority do tithe, therefore again we permit the Eishes Chaver to participate in the process up until the addition of the water.
Shabbos, we don't hold that it's the mind can eat from.
Sure, right, because there is low efshar. There is low efshar,
so
because
the Hachana for Shabbos wouldn't make a difference? It wouldn't fall under it?
I don't know how far back do you extend that? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good shayla. Rava Amar Rava says Hacha ba'ama aretz derab meir v'tumah derab banan. So Rava says that here, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with an ama aretz according to Rav Meir. So we're going to see Rav Meir has a unique definition of an ama aretz, and we're dealing with tumah and tara midirab banan. What does this mean? This sanya ezu ama aretz. Rabbi, who is an ama aretz? Kol she'enu ochel chulyav b'tara div Rabbi Meir. So we'll say Rabbi Meir's definition of an Amma Aretz, we'll say, is not someone who doesn't tithe, but rather someone who eats their chulin in a state of tumah. Someone who eats their chulin in a state of tumah, div Rabbi Meir. V'cham d'cham say, no, the definition of an Amma Aretz is kol she'enu ma'aser peirosav. Whoever does not properly tithe his produce. So the Gemara says, "I v'ham midiktani seifa mishetatil es hamayim lo siga ima." So we'll say, here what we have over here is the following. So what we're trying, just so you understand, we're trying to understand the fundamental distinction in the Mishnah. We have two cases in the Mishnah. Case number one is a Shemitah case. Case number two is an Amma Aretz case. So in the Shemitah case, the Mishnah ruled that the neighbor is permitted to participate in her with her neighbor. Well, that doesn't make sense. The neighbor, sorry. She'enu ochel chulya b'tara, which means he eats his chulin b'tuma. He doesn't eat it in a state of tara. He eats it even when he's tamei. So says the Gemara. So says, listen to this. So the fundamental machlokes in Abayin Rav is the following. So here we have to distinguish between two cases. In the case of Shemitah, the Mishnah permits, we'll call her the observant neighbor, to participate in the process up until the grinding. She permits her to lend the utensils, but she can't participate in any process of the actual wheat preparation. In the case of the Amma Aretz, we allow the observant neighbor to participate up through what? Up through the grinding of the wheat, up until the addition of the water. The Gemara is trying to understand what's the distinction between the two cases. So Abayi understands, because the truth is, in the case of the Amma Aretz with the tithing, we actually assume the majority of Amma Aretzim do in fact tithe. There's only a rabbinic decree, and the rabbis only made the decree on the produce itself. But the process up until the time when the produce itself, when the wheat itself actually becomes chayv and shumos and maizros, we allow the observant neighbor to participate. Rava says the Amma Aretz that we're dealing with in case number two, interestingly enough, is an Amma Aretz according to Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, so what's the definition of an Amma Aretz? Really, Rabbi Meir says everybody should eat even their chulin betara. Everybody should even eat their chulin in a state of ritual purity. The Amma Aretz is someone who eats his chulin in a state of ritual impurity. So says the Gemara, so let's analyze this. The fact that the second case of the Mishnah said that once the Eishas Amma Aretz adds the water, the Eishas Chaver should not go ahead and participate in this process anymore. That would seem to indicate to us, now that's a Tumantara issue. Because once she adds the water, remember as we saw before, the Kalim are Tmeim, which means the Chala becomes Tmei from the beginning, which makes it sound like the first case, which was the Shemitah case, is not a din of Tumavatara. To which the Gemara says, Reisha v'seifa b'tuma v'tara. In reality, both Reisha and the Seifa are dealing with Tuma and Tara. The Reisha b'tuma schulin, v'seifa b'tuma schalo. And the Reisha is talking about a case, again, of Tuma schulin, where chulin are becoming Tmein, and the Seifa is talking about a case of where the Chala is becoming Tamei. So says the Gemara, or Minhu, but let's ask Akash on this, on the basis of all side, Tochanin, u'makidin, eitzel, ochle shvius, the eitzel ochle perosehen betuma, aval lo li ochle shvius, velo lo ochle perosehen betuma. So we'll say, listen to this. So the halacha is, you could grind up your wheat. So we'll say, if I have ground up wheat, flour, right? I have flour, and I need to store it by someone. So we'll say, so the shayla is, who has halachic credibility that I could store my wheat by them without concern that what? That they're going to swap it out for something else. So says the Gemara, I can go ahead and grind up my wheat, take my flour, umakidin etzel ochle shvius ve'etzel ochle perosein betuma, and I could leave that wheat, I could deposit that wheat with people who eat illegal shmita produce, and people who eat their peros, their produce, in a state of tuma. Look at Rashi. Umakidin etzel eosa etzel ochle shvius she'in chashudim lo lahachlif velo liga. So I'll say, here's the chat, the Mishnah says, I am permitted to take my ritually pure wheat and deposit it with people who eat illegal Shemitah produce, and people who eat their peros, their fruit, in a state of ritual impurity. And I don't have to be afraid that what? That they're either going to swap out my wheat for some other wheat, or more importantly, touch my wheat. I don't have to be concerned for that. However, avalo, lo'ochle shvius, velo lo'ochle peros sehen, but what can't I do? I can't go ahead and grind wheat for those who go ahead and eat illegal Shemitah produce, or those who eat their peros in a state of tumah. So we'll say in this case over here, if they give me their wheat to grind, I can't grind their wheat for them. Look at Rashi. If the person who violates Shemitah comes and brings me his wheat, I have a mill, and he's bringing me his wheat to grind his meat, I can't grind it for him. Why? Because I cannot help them in the commission of their Avera. So we'll say we have a contradiction. Remember, what does the Brisa say over here? I can go out and deposit my wheat with someone who violates Shemitah or someone who eats his peros betumah. Why? Because it's my wheat, and I can safely assume that what? That he's not going to touch it or to swap it out for a different wheat. But if the person who eats Shemitah produce or the person who goes ahead and eats his peros in a state of tumah gives me his wheat to grind, I can't do that. Why? Why? Because that's miseil over avera. Because that's aiding and abetting someone in the commission of an avera. But that contradicts the Mishnah. Because what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that for the Eshes Ama Aretz, the wife of the Talmid Chacham can't participate with her in what? In grinding and sorting the wheat. To which the Gemara says, Amar Abai Hasam Bekoin Achoshet Leechol B'Truma Askinon. What are we talking about over here? This case over here is talking about a Kohen who is suspect of eating Truma Bituma. That he eats Truma even in a state of Tuma. Which I will say is a Chashash Doraisa. The Habile Tuma Doraisa. Which I will say actually represents a Tuma Doraisa. And that's why, again, if this Kohen goes ahead and brings me his wheat, I know that he has a reputation of eating Truma even in a state of Tuma. I can't grind his wheat. Why not? Because Lamaisa, there's a concern that I'm really aiding and abetting in the commission of an Avera, and it's Doraisa Avera. If that's the case, about that we're dealing with a Kohen who's choshed to eat the Truma in a state of Tuma, then why am I permitted to deposit my wheat with him? Meaning, should I not be concerned that what? That he may go ahead and touch my wheat as well, render it Tame? So the Gemara says, or Minhu, let's raise another Kasha. Mafkidin Truma Eitzel Eitzel Yisrael Ama Aretz Velo Eitzel Kohen Ama Aretz. I could deposit my Truma. It's actually a very interesting halacha. I could deposit my Truma with the Yisrael Ama Aretz, but not with a coin Amaret. Why? Mipnei Shalibo Gaspa. Because his heart is familiar with it. What does that mean? A Yisrael, we assume, has a general reverence and respect for Truma. And therefore, again, I could deposit my Truma with the Yisrael, and I'm pretty confident that what? He's not going to lay a finger on it. He's not going to swap it out for something else. On the other hand, I can't deposit my Truma with a Kohen Amaretz. Why? Because a Kohen eats Truma all the time. And if he's an Amaretz, it might mean that he's not careful with the laws of Tumah and Tahara. Therefore, I have to be concerned that he may touch my Truma or may swap it out for something else. So Rabbi Eloi Hacham asking, what are we dealing with over here? Bikli Cheres Hamukaf Tzamit Psil. Oh, we're talking about over here, Bosei, where I deposit the flour with this coin Amaretz, or with this coin who's choshed, in a kli cheres, an earthenware utensil that is sealed. Now, interestingly enough, the halacha is that if you have a earthenware utensil that is sealed, the contents cannot become mekabel tuma. So essentially, I'm depositing the wheat with him, the flour with him, in a tuma-proof utensil. I have a lechosh shema tesiteno ishtanida. Rabbi, kli cheres hamukaf tzamit psil only works with what? Only works if you touch it. But let's say if a woman who's a nida goes ahead and carries it, lemaisa, again, even the contents of that could become tame. Elo amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu, elo kasha. It's not a question. It's not a contradiction. Kan beperosh hochshuru, kan beperosh lo hochshuru. Both are two different cases. So one case is where the produce is ready to be comfortable. Well, so you know that an item can only become the item is only receptive to tuma if it comes in contact with the liquid. If it's not hokshur, if it didn't come in contact with the liquid, it can be makabel tuma. So says the Gemara, when do I have to be concerned that maybe again the koin amaretz will go ahead and touch the item and be matame it? That's only when the item itself is hukshar l'tuma. But if it's not hukshar l'tuma, if it's not receptive to tuma yet, then I need not be concerned. Or minu, the Gemara is another kasha. Hamolich chitin l'tochein kusi o l'tochein amaretz harehin becheskasan l'maisor l'shvias avalo l'tuma. So what I say, interestingly enough, the halacha is that if you bring your wheat to a grinder, so we'll say not everybody had a mill. So there were people, I guess, who operated mills. You bring them your wheat, you bring them their wheat, they grind your wheat for you. So what happens? If a person brings his wheat to a tochen kusi, to a kusi grinder, or to a grinder who's an amaretz, the halacha is that the wheat is beches kasan lemaiser. Rashi says, beches kasan, shein choshud lahachlif b'sheino mu'usur peroshvias. So we'll say, when I bring my wheat, or I bring my produce to the kusi, or to the amaretz, to their mill, I don't have to be concerned that they're going to swap out my wheat for something else. I don't have to be concerned for that. However, avalo l'tuma. But for tuma purposes, we'll say there's a different halacha. What does it mean, avalo l'tuma? Rashi says, chashinan shema naga. I do have to be concerned that what? That maybe the amaretz or the kusi touched my wheat, and therefore again the wheat is tuma. To which the Gemara says, one second, hi my rumya. What's the comparison over here? Lavu kimna beperosh lohokshiru. So we'll say, we just said before, we're talking about peros, we're talking about produce that is not yet receptive to tumah, didn't come into contact with water. If that's the case, then how could it be makabel tumah? You're right. The karkari le my karli. So the one who brought up the question, why did you bring up the question? Mishum the kabay le mimachri siyaloh, because you wanted to contrast the next braisa with it. So we'll say, so let's go by it a little bit. So remember, what the Gemara is suggesting right now is something very interesting, which is that lemais, again, it appears that what we're concerned about is the following. We're not concerned that even people who are chashid, even people who are suspect for violations of certain area of halacha, I'm not concerned that they're going to swap my produce for another produce. If I deposit something with them, I'm not concerned they're going to swap out my stuff and put in their own stuff. What I do have to be concerned for is what? Is what? That they'll touch it. That I have to be concerned for, which is logical, that they're going to handle it. And therefore, again, if there are people who are not careful with the laws of Tumah Tahara, I do have to be concerned that perhaps, again, my items, my produce may become Tameh. Well, let's just go a little bit weiter. So remember, what we've established is that when you deposit produce with some of these individuals, they retain their chazakah for Maiser and for Shemitah, which the Bible says is another way of saying, I need not be concerned that they were swapped out for other produce. However, and I don't have to be concerned that, again, they were swapped out for any other produce. The Gemara says, is that true, that you have to be concerned for a swap? Or minhu, hanosin l'chamoso ma'aser shuno sinla v'shuno talimena b'bnei shechashuda nechalefes hamiskalkel. But I'll say, listen to this. If one deposits flour with his mother-in-law, so listen to this. I mean, this is a very loaded case on many levels. So what happens? I go ahead and I give my flour to my mother-in-law. So what's the halacha? I'll say. So ma'aser shenosin, I have to tithe the flour when I give it to her. And also the eshu notalimena. And when I get the flour back from her, I, whatever flour left, I also have to tithe it again. Right? And I also have to take, of course, the proper tithes from the loaves themselves. So the Gemara says, why is that? Narashi points out over here, Hanosin lechamoso, isol ataknalo. So I'm giving my mother-in-law flour to bake for me. Vehu chaver, I am someone who's careful with chumas amayis. So vehi eshes ama aretz. But my mother-in-law is the wife of an ama aretz. So that's not like a, that's not, I'm saying over the case, right? So the Gemara says over here, the Gemara says the following. So what's talocha? So I have to go ahead and take meiser again from whatever I get back as well. Which Rabbo says another way of saying what? That I have to be choshesh that my mother-in-law swapped my flour with other flour. Right? Why? Because the Gemara says, Shechashuda mechalefes hameskalkel. Because if my mother-in-law sees that some of my flour is going bad, she's going to swap out my spoiled flour for good flour. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that Ame Ha'aretz are chashud to swap flour. You see that? Meaning we just said before that I have to be careful. I have to assume that Ame Ha'aretz is going to touch my produce, but I need not be concerned that what? That an Ame Ha'aretz is going to swap out. But here we see it's not true. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam kidiktani taima amra bihuda rotsihi bitakhanas bita Ubosha mechasna. Both said the case over here is different. Why? Why is she swapping it out? Not because Amea Aretz swap out flour, but this is a unique case. Why? Because both say here, what does my mother-in-law want? My mother-in-law wants, first of all, she wants the best for her daughter. Right? Forget about me. Right? She wants the best for her daughter, so her daughter is going to be eating this bread. She wants her daughter to eat high quality bread. So if she sees that the flour of her son-in-law is on the verge of spoilage, she's going to swap out that flour and give the good flour. And also, she's embarrassed of her son-in-law. She doesn't want her son-in-law to think that she's giving him inferior flour. Therefore, again, in this kind of case, because there's a familial connection, that's why there's a chashash that she's going to swap out the spoiled flour and give the good flour. But under normal circumstances, we do not assume that halacha lemaisa. We do not assume that halacha lemaisa and Am Haaretz swaps out his flour, or I should say, the deposited flour for a different kind of flour. So we'll stop over here because I wanted to share with you a short parsha thought. So we'll stop over here, Meretz Hashem. Again, this is mid sugya with do Am Haaretz. Do we assume that if you deposit your item with an Am Haaretz, we've already established that the Am Haaretz touches it. Therefore, again, there's going to be a problem with tumah. The shaila is, does the Am Haaretz swap it out? That remains still a point for discussion.